Hello. Welcome to this
Hello.
podcast. This is Evie.
Hello.
I don't meet you. This is my first Zoom podcast as well. We're really struggling on how
the struggle of
to
meeting.
set this
Oh
up.
my gosh. Yeah.
Evie and I know Evie through YouTube. I don't know how I'm gonna like articulate how to start this, but essentially, like as you can tell by the title of this podcast, we're doing a podcast on maladaptive daydreaming.
Oh
And
my gosh.
I found Evie on YouTube because I guess I'll like briefly just like say my beginning of maladaptive daydreaming or like why I searched Evie in the first place. But I essentially I had no idea what it was. And a friend of mine asked me last year, like, what I did to fall asleep, because I've had really bad sleep problems my whole life. And I told her that I had an imaginary world inside of my head that I go to every night, that I've had since I was a little girl, that like have changed over the years. And she was like, you should probably like talk to someone about that. Like, that sounds kind of weird. And I was like, okay. And I did. I told my psychiatrist, and he told me like that's actually a dissociation disorder called maladaptive
Wow.
daydreaming. And then,
Wow.
yeah.
Because not many people know about like therapists, psychiatrists.
Oh,
Like
really? Damn.
nobody, like they might know it exists, like they might have heard about it before, but if you explain to them, hey, this is what I'm experiencing, they will not know what, like they don't know the like this is maladaptive daydreaming. They know it exists, but they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Every single psychiatrist or medical professional that I have like dealt with talking about maladaptive daydreaming, they literally did not know. I knew more about maladaptive daydreaming than they did. And it's crazy. And that's actually why I made my channel, because not many
Yeah.
people knew about it.
It's because you're the when I searched, so immediately once I found out like the name of it, I was like, there's a name. Like I didn't even know this was something that everyone wasn't doing as well. Like I thought everyone was doing this, because why wouldn't they be doing that? Like in my head, I was like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like that's how I was like, of
Yeah.
course you go to an imaginary world in your head.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of how I felt about it. So when I searched on YouTube, you were literally the only video of another girl talking about maladaptive daydreaming.
Yes, I
And you
know.
like literally, you like when I watched your videos, it was the first time I've ever had someone say exactly like my experience in out loud. I'd never heard it. So I was like, oh
Yeah.
my God, I need to message this girl.
I
I
get that a
need to talk
lot.
to her.
I get that a lot. Like that's actually why I made my channel, because I was like, because I actually started on Tumblr and I started posting about maladaptive
Love
daydreaming.
that.
Yeah, and I was like talking about maladaptive daydreaming because I found a community of people that finally someone else like actually is like experiencing what I'm experiencing. But I could not in words, like there was no way in one post I could say what I wanted to say. So I was like, that's why I started my YouTube channel. And I'm like, this way I can actually talk about what I want to talk about and it be in a video, and I can talk more about what I want to talk about and like it be, you know, make sense. And it's
Yeah.
not just this like massive paragraph of like words,
Yeah.
which is why I made my channel. And I was like, no one is talking about this on YouTube. Like maybe one, like people will make one video and
Yeah.
then that'll be it.
Yeah.
And there was no one who was dedicated to maladaptive daydreaming at the time. And I was like, I'm going to start like,
You're like, I'm
I'm going to make
campaigning for
videos.
this. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'll be the first. Can someone else please
I'll be
join?
the
But now, like,
spokesperson.
yeah. And I was like, but oh, yeah. So many people in the comments were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Like, I experienced the
Yeah.
same thing as you. And I'm like, this is why I've done this, because
Yeah.
people don't know. People don't know. Like they are just like,
Yeah.
oh
It's
my
definitely
gosh.
like a niche community of like a very specific symptom of trauma. I guess it's a symptom. Would you, what would,
Yeah.
yeah. What do you want to explain to
Well,
people what maladaptive daydreaming is for people who have no idea?
yeah. Oh, put me on the spot, because I always have a script for my videos. I'm always like, this is what I'm going to say. Basically, maladaptive daydreaming is a very, and I don't want to use the words intense daydreaming, because intensely daydreaming is actually something different to maladaptive daydreaming. Maladaptive daydreaming is basically, it's a form of dissociation. Originally, they didn't class it as a form of dissociation, but they do now class it as a form of dissociation.
What was it originally in, to them?
It was just a separate thing. Because it was like very, very, because it's only 2002, I think, that the idea of maladaptive daydreaming was brought up by I think he's a psychologist, a doctor in psychology, Eli Sommer. He first came up with the term maladaptive daydreaming. So it actually hasn't been that long, and there hasn't been much research done. So first they like characterized it as this own little like thing. And now a lot of like people who do know about maladaptive daydreaming in terms of like medical professionals, they do class it as a dissociative like disorder. But basically it's daydreaming to the point that it is affecting your life in some way, because it's basically disordered daydreaming. That's the best way to like put it. It's not intensely daydreaming, because intensely daydreaming is very different to maladaptive daydreaming.
What is the difference between intensive daydreaming? Like what, I don't even know like what that distinction is.
Intensive daydreaming would probably be like you daydream a lot, but it's not daydreaming at a level that is maladaptive daydreaming. Is like you have things called like paracosms, which are whole entire worlds that you create in your head. You have very, very complex inner like things going on in
storylines,
the world. It's like it's basically the complex. Intense daydreaming is intense daydreaming. You're daydreaming, but it's not necessarily like you're creating this very, very complex inner like world kind of situation. Yeah.
Do you want to explain what a paracosm is? Because you also were the first person I ever heard say paracosm. And then I had also a word to put to it, because I never knew what to call that.
Yeah. So a lot of the words that were created to basically explain maladaptive daydreaming and the symptoms and stuff are created by people in the community. And one of those words is paracosm. And the word paracosm basically means a world that someone creates through maladaptive daydreaming. But people who don't maladaptive daydream, I don't believe, cannot even understand how realistic these worlds are. Like in my paracosm at one point in my life was more real to me than this world. It's like at that point in my life when I was maladaptive daydreaming so much, there was reality, and then there was other people's reality. It was like, it was so intense and so realistic and like detailed that it was as real, if not realer, than this world. They're like so intensely detailed, like,
and person and like completely personable to each person. It's obviously, it's like their imaginary world.
It's so intensely detailed that it is just as real as this reality. And that's something that I know people who can't maladaptive daydream can never wrap their head around. But the intensity and the realist, like how realistic it is the exact same as how realistic this world is.
Dissociation, I like know so many people are not going to know what this is. So that I'm just trying to like kind of like punch out like information that will help them understand.
Yeah. So I can explain dissociation.
Mm-hmm.
So dissociation, everyone dissociates. I will say everyone dissociates, but there is a spectrum. For example, let's say you've just finished work and you're driving home and you don't really remember the drive home because you were dissociating. That is the very, very, very natural form of dissociation that everyone experiences. But then there becomes disordered dissociation, where you are dissociating at a level that is interfering with your life. You are using it as a way to cope with trauma. and things that are happening in your life. And it can go from being just a dissociative, like dissociating from a, like just dissociating, just kind of like feeling all fuzzy and stuff, all the way up to dissociative identity disorder. Like it can go from that dissociating on the drive home all the way up to dissociative identity disorder. And there's a very, very, very big spectrum. And it's very natural for people to be on the very, very low end of dissociation. But maladaptive daydreaming, it depends on how often you're maladaptive daydreaming, how it's affecting your life. But that is a severe form of dissociation.
Is it I didn't know it was a severe form.
Well, it depends on how much it affects your life.
Mm-hmm.
If it's stopping you from being able to pursue your goals in this reality, then it is. If you are neglecting doing things that you need to do in this reality, then it is a severe form, because it, like if you aren't eating because you're too busy daydreaming, that's bad. That's severe.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's disordered. I have dissociative identity disorder.
What do you want to explain also? Like what dissociative? Yeah. Just I also like just to disclaimer, like I did not know what dissociation was, and that was my actual problem until about a year ago.
I didn't know. I didn't know until I like learned about all of this stuff. And then but dissociative identity disorder is basically it's a very, very complex trauma disorder. And if you put dissociation on a spectrum, dissociative identity disorder is at the very, very far end of, it's the very, very last thing on the spectrum. It is the most intense form of dissociation. It is, you can only develop dissociative identity disorder before the age of 9, because it's the way that the brain, like, kind of, basically the way that you develop DID or dissociative identity disorder is your brain, or you are going through something so traumatic that your brain purposefully decides to not go through a certain developmental stage. So you don't integrate fully. Like your brain doesn't, your personalities, your alter egos that you have when you're a child doesn't integrate. Because when you're born, you have something called alter egos. So you're not actually born with a fully formed personality. And that step, that developmental stage, doesn't actually happen until about the age of 9. Someone with DID didn't go through that developmental stage. It's crazy and it's so complicated, but that's basically what DID is.
So you can't form DID like later in your life. This had to have been something you brought from your childhood into your adult life.
Yeah, okay. But a lot of people, you know, have DID, but they don't realize until they're like 50. It's like it could be there, but you're not, if you don't have like symptoms that are present, or like you're just living your life and it's not like affecting you in any way, just because you have it doesn't mean it's always going to be like so obvious to even yourself.
What are,
that's how you've lived your whole life.
That's another good point, actually, is like,
to
what you're just saying is like, you don't realize, the way you're living, life is incorrect or unhealthy or just genuinely a trauma symptom.
Yeah.
Like you actually have no idea because
literally
it's
just
your reality.
It's like that.
Wait, what did you say? It cut out.
Someone just tried to call me. Oh
no, you're
God.
Fine. You're fine.
Jesus, I'm literally, my phone is on a soft drink can.
Love that. What soft drink?
Pasito?
I'm curious, like, what are some symptoms of DID? Like, when did you, like, growing up, first notice that you had, like, any sort of dissociation problems? Or, like, when did you first get diagnosed with dissociation? And, like, what did it look like?
Well, the first memory I have of dissociation, well, actually, there's a lot of memories I have of dissociation, sort of, and I do not know the order they come in. But one of the major things was I actually used to go into a particular mirror in a particular bathroom. And when I would look into the mirror, I didn't see my face.
What would you see?
I would see a girl who had blonde hair, blue eyes. She would be talking to me and be very, very energetic. And like talking to me, like kind of like she was on like a TV show or something, or like she was like doing a podcast or something. Like she was so happy and stuff. And that is who I saw in the mirror. I didn't see me. Because I have naturally brunette hair and naturally brown eyes. Wait,
so that you were literally seeing something that didn't even look like you?
Yeah, I was. Oh my God. I was in the mirror, I did not know what I looked like. Mm-hmm. Even today, like to this day, when I look in the mirror, it is so hard for me to see what I look like. Mm-hmm. And that's partially because of like the DID, but also maladaptive daydreaming. Because in my daydream world, my paracosm, I don't look like what I look like here.
Mm-hmm. What do you look like
It's very, very slight differences. Like I don't have green hair. Mm-hmm. It's very, very slight differences. My eye color is different. I'm shorter. There's very little like things that are different. And so in my head, that's what I look like, but that's not what I look like.
Yeah.
So mirrors are
tricky.
Yeah. And sometimes I like do look in the mirror and I actually see myself and I'm like, who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, so at a young age, you were seeing like images of a girl that was essentially like in your mind, pretty much, like that wasn't real. Okay. So did you tell anyone about these symptoms, or like,
I did later on, but it was like for my whole childhood, I wasn't living here. Mm-hmm. I was either in my paracosm, my daydream world, or I was like severely dissociating. Like I didn't have a childhood in this reality. I always say this to people when I'm like talking about maladaptive daydreaming, and I like can't stress how much this is fact, but I was not raised by the adults that lived in this reality. I was raised by the adults that lived in my head. And that is crazy for people to like understand.
It's so crazy. Yeah. Like hearing you talk, like because I've never had a dial, obviously, like I have a more of a mild case of dissociation. I didn't have DID, but even you talk like the imaginary parents in your head, that is like crazy that someone else, like it's really trippy actually
to hear. I was not raised in this world. This world isn't my home. Mm-hmm. Like my home is in my head, and that isn't healthy at all.
Yeah,
but it's like it is survival. Like I didn't grow up here. Mm-hmm. And so it's like I don't live here. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just like this like entity that just kind of floats in this reality, but my brain is somewhere else. Over the last probably 6 months, I'm learning how to live in this reality for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. Like I still maladaptive daydream and all that stuff, but I have never, ever, ever lived in this reality for this long. Mm-hmm. And I hate it. I hate it, honestly. I want to go back to my comfort place. I literally hate this
place. I love the honesty.
I know. I hate this place. I
fucking hate it.
Yeah, I really do. And funny. I want to go back, and I want to rely on maladaptive daydreaming. I think that's part of the problem. People who maladaptive daydream, it's so comforting that the idea of getting better is like what
boring. It's like boring, and it feels like I've like
to live here.
I've also like made a vow, not a vow to myself, but I know that there's like no way I'll ever actually ever fully stop maladaptive daydreaming. Like I know that, like, it's the only thing that helps me go to sleep, because if I'm thinking too much, like if I'm anxious or just thinking, my brain won't stop. I have such bad sleep problems, literally horrible. And maladaptive daydreaming is the only thing that has ever worked to quiet my mind. Cause I can just go there and it relaxes me.
And it's like, you could be here and it just, people don't understand how comforting it is. But something I do want to mention about maladaptive daydreaming is not everyone can do it.
What would you say is like well, it's funny you say this
But
because my friend who I first like said out loud that this is what I did, because I never said that before out loud. She actually can't, her, this friend of mine, can't even visualize anything. She couldn't even visualize a green tree. It was just the idea that a green tree is in her head. So I understand there's that distinction of like there's some people who can't even visualize.
There are some people who literally, like, some people are born with the ability to maladaptive daydream, and some people aren't. So if you're born with the ability to maladaptive daydream, it doesn't mean that you're going to maladaptive daydream, because you might not have the conditions that mean that you like maladaptive daydream, right? But there are a lot of people who can't, literally cannot maladaptive daydream, no matter how hard they try. So people who maladaptive daydream, it's a very, very, like, small group of people who are actually capable of doing that. So if you are a maladaptive daydreamer, you have a very unique mind that is capable of quite powerful stuff. And that's the same with dissociative identity disorder. Not everyone is able to dissociate at a level that
Like that.
would cause DID. A lot of people aren't able to dissociate at a level that other people dissociate at.
No, I loved like seeing your videos, like gave me so much comfort. Like, cause I remember you had, it was called like Unique Souls or something like that. Like you had something, and I was just like, wow,
That
like
was
that
my old
makes, yeah,
username.
I love that. And it made me like so like feel like I found like I don't know. I just like thought that was a really nice way of putting like something that's maybe not like widely accepted as like cool.
My username used to be, oh, I miss those days. I shouldn't have changed my, I
You
changed
can
my
go
name to
back.
my, I could go back. I think my brand will always be Unique Souls, but I just changed my like YouTube name to my legal name, or like my name, because I was like, I'll make a brand for myself so people know my name.
What would you say like give someone the ability to maladaptive daydream?
You need to be able to, first of all, you need to be able to intensely daydream. Not everyone is able to do that. Like, the mind is a powerful thing. And you were either born with the ability or you're not. Like, that's literally how it is. It's just the way your brain works. Some people are able to visualize things very, very intensely and are able to kind of see things in their mind so intensely, but that isn't the case for most people. Like, a lot of people, like your friend, can't do that, literally cannot.
That to me is insane in itself. Like, how the fuck can't you? Like, what?
Like, someone can watch this who isn't a maladaptive daydreamer and try and maladaptive daydream, and if they don't have the ability to, they won't be able to.
It's interesting because like one is like pointed trying to do it, and then the other one it just comes from mere desire. Like mere like this is
It's
what
like,
I it's just an
and it's like,
unconscious thing. Like it's just what you do. It's just like you like that is what you're doing. Like no like it's quite bizarre.
and it's
Like
like, it's almost natural.
it is natural.
You don't even like
It's like definition of
intend
natural actually, because
to.
like you don't, no one can tell you to do it or not. You're just doing it. Like you're just,
You
that's
could be
just,
daydreaming and not even realize. Like, you could be valid after daydreaming and not even realize. There were so many times where I kind of get home from uni and then I'm just like, oh, I'm just gonna daydream, and then realize I've been daydreaming for 10 hours.
Damn. Damn.
But in my mind, only an hour has passed. It's like, and it's not something I can there, and sometimes the need to maladaptive daydream overpowers everything else. Like, my need to, eat, my need to do my uni work, it literally overpowers me to the point where I cannot function at all in this reality unless I daydream first.
Do you want to like describe, like, I don't know if you're like, whatever, obviously to your own comfort level, but do you want to describe what inside your maladapt, like in one of your paracosms looks like, maybe your most recent one, the one that you've gone to most recently?
Well, so one of the ones I have is, it has my like para family, I'll call it, because like the word para we use for character, because character was kind of like that to us, they're more than just characters, they're like actual beings and they're actual people. So the word we use for characters is para, and so I call it my para family. Basically I have like several brothers. I wasn't raised by like my parents, I was raised by my older brother, and I'm studying the same thing that I'm studying like here. Mm-hmm. That I'm studying in real life, I'm studying to become a pharmacist. So in my world, I'm studying to become a pharmacist as well. Crazy thing is when I need to study, I actually daydream about studying.
Love that.
And then daydream. And so that daydreaming about studying, I'm like actively doing that in this world, but I'm daydreaming at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I still live with my older brother in that world.
What does it look like?
He has children. There's a house where we live. There's very specific like locations. Mm-hmm. Like there's university, there's the house that we live in, and a lot of the scenarios that happen in that house. And when the scenarios happen, they can happen over and over and over again. I will daydream about the same conversation. The same
scenario over. That's so funny, you do that too.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. That it's like everyone who maladapt daydreams does this.
I have the same situation that I play every single night. It's been 5 years of the same situation.
Yeah. It's the exact same thing over and over and over again. That is very, very common. Like I think everyone who maladapt daydreams does that. I know someone who like literally she's been daydreaming for like what, over 10 years, and literally 11 days have passed.
What do you mean 11 days have passed? Oh, like
within, 11 days
within past, oh my god, damn.
Yeah.
I don't even have like a time thing in mind. Like you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like no time really has passed. It's kind of just all pockets of different worlds.
Different like pocket, well mine's like pockets of like scenarios and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like there's like the layout of the paracosm, and then there are just scenarios that are happening in the paracosm, and it's like I could have like a daydream about this specific scenario, and then time will pass, but I'm not necessarily actively daydreaming about that time that passed, and then I'll daydream about this like scenario, and then like pockets, like time pockets kind of that I see through into that world, and I daydream about the scenario over and over and over and over again. So it's like what is happening in the paracosm is happening in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Like there are things happening right now in the paracosm, but I'm not intensely like daydreaming about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
It's like there's a timeline, but I can jump through
all of
different
it.
Sections of the timeline and daydream about those specific scenarios over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. Tell me if you relate to this, but I remember like if I want to change like a wall in one of my houses or like a world in like a house in one of the worlds, I can't just change it. Like I have to get a construction team to come in and bulldoze the wall and redo it. And then my mind will accept it as a new wall. That is the only way. Do you have to do that too?
Yes.
And I can't because it needs to be real. Like it needs to be really changed, like for me to accept that it's there.
Oh my gosh. Sometimes that this doesn't happen with everyone, but with me, it's like if it's not realistic, it can't happen.
Yeah.
No, like, do you know what I mean? If it's not something that can actually happen, then it won't.
So it depends for me because I saw some that were like people get really whimsical, like with their worlds. I like will get like my things that aren't real that like couldn't happen is everything's on water for me in my world. for some reason. That was like my next question for you, actually, because I was going to ask, like, if you have, like, talked about this with a psychiatrist and what, like, it means, like, your fantasies, what they mean. Because I've briefly talked with mine about, like, what it means to have this, like, aspect of water in all of them, except my first one, actually. Except the one I had is, my first ever one doesn't have water. Every single other one is, like, either on water, I have a moat in my house, and my scenario has to do with water. That repeats every time.
Wow.
So it's like some weird thing. So that can't really happen. Yay. Like the aspect of like,
you know,
like that's like the kind of stuff that like doesn't make sense, but I accept it in my head, but that's
like,
it.
Yeah. Like there's a different kind of like what can realistically happen in your head to what can realistically happen in this world.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the rules are very different to in your head than they are in this reality, but there still are rules. Like, for example, I could be having a conversation with one of my paras or one of my characters, and I want them to say something, but it's not in their character to say that thing, and I cannot for the life of me make them say that.
Yeah,
they will say what they want to say. They will say something that like fits their character, and it's like, can you just
play
go for script this for a little bit? Yeah, like and it's things like that. It's like I want to go and do this thing in this world, but sometimes the world has more power over its own self than I have over it.
It's I wonder what that is. Like, I wonder what part of our brain like won't allow that non-truthfulness to come forward.
I've actually made a video about this, but characters can become so intense and so their own thing that they become something called a tulpa.
A topper?
Yeah, tulpa. I've made a video about this. It's called tulpamancy. Mm-hmm. And it's basically when a para or a character that lives inside of your head becomes so detailed and realistic that they literally become their own being.
Person. Oh my God.
Yep. And it's different to alters. Like in DID, you have alters. It's different to that, but anyone can create one. It's not something that is only people who have dissociative identity disorder, because it's completely different to that. But a tulpa, is when you literally create, either on purpose or by accident, a being that is so realistic and all of that, that it becomes its own person to the point that it makes its own decisions without you consciously making the decisions. It basically can exist in your mind without you consciously creating it.
Yeah.
Like don't have to, like you don't have to actually be willing it to say things and do things. It will do things on its own, and it exists without the conscious mind needing it to be there.
Yeah.
So it literally exists subconsciously.
Is that
dangerous? Becomes its own being. I don't know. I don't think it is. I think it can be dangerous in the sense that people might kind of lose their life in this reality. Because that's when things become very, very intense. But it's actually a practice that is purposefully done, and it's called tulpamancy. I have a whole video about tulpa because it's very, very complicated, and it's what can happen when you maladaptive daydream so intensely.
Yeah.
Things start to become its own being, and you stop having control over them.
Yeah. Like, well, I guess my question like still remains, like, is there anything like from your paracosms or like intricate worlds that like have meant like this is how you view yourself or this is how you view other people? Like, have you got like has there ever been any discoveries made with kind of like a analysis of yourself through your imaginary world?
Honestly, I think all of that kind of work has been done internally. I've never done it with a psychiatrist or anyone else. It's just like internally, I kind of like look at it. For example, a lot of the figures or the paras or characters in my mind in my comfort world, in my para family, are male. And that kind of signifies that a lot of, when I was younger, all of the people that I could really rely on were male, mm-hmm. like male adults. So that crosses over into my paracosm, where I have created comfort characters and comfort paras that are male. And a lot of the kind of parental figures are male, because all of the parental figures in my life that I could rely on were male in this reality. So I think there are a lot of scenarios that happened in my paracosm that I kind of like took a step back and was like, I am using my inner world, like I'm using my paracosm to process trauma that has happened in this world. So if something really, really traumatic happens in this world, it will happen in my paracosm. And then I will spend time in that paracosm processing that trauma and using my comfort paras to help me deal with that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of like things that I need to work on in this reality, I work on in my head with the help of my paras.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
And like that safety net.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because like it's like something you create. So it's like, where does this desire come from? You know, like where did the desire come from to escape to this world? And like, why, what is it about this world that you've created that like makes you feel comfort? You know, like I asked that to myself because like, I don't know. And like, it gives me great comfort is the thing. And so, something I learned like with the aspect of water, because my psychiatrist said, he like just like, this is the one who told me about maladaptive daydreaming. He just like threw a bunch of shit on me. He was saying like one of my paracosms is a cardboard box that I live in. And it's like the coolest cardboard box ever. It has like everything I need. It's like a tiny home, but smaller. Like I have to lay down in it, but it has everything, like every gadget. Like there's this for the food. And it's like kind of like whimsical, but it's like a whimsical cardboard box. And every single day it rains. Like every day it rains. And I live in this cardboard box. And this is like one of my fantasies. Why is this my fantasy? Like, why am I fantasizing about being homeless? Like, I don't know. And so I told him like, this is just one of the scenarios. Cause he wanted to like kind of dissect it. And he came to kind of the conclusion that that's like somewhat how I feel about myself, is like abandoned in a sense. So, and that really illuminated something I had never acknowledged. He like really said this. And that's why I ask, I'm like, I wonder for other people who deal with this, like what like kind of like aspects of their paracosm translate to how they even feel about themselves, like how they feel about who they are and like their self-worth, even like stuff like that. So that's what I found interesting. And the aspect of water, he said was like rain and water. If you're safe in this cardboard box or in your house, because in all of my worlds, it rains every day for some reason, all of them. And like, he alluded to the fact that like, you're safe with yourself. Like I'm safe with me, and it's scary out there and it's raining out there, but I'm safe in my house. So that's how I guess felt and feel still internally. And it translates in my fantasy world that I feel this way of, I feel safe with me. And everyone else and everything else is dangerous. And that's the aspect of water.
That's literally, people always say like, what's the cure? What's the cure? What's the cure? And I'm like, I can't give you a cure, because there is a cure, but the thing is, you can make it to a point where it's not destroying your life, but that's not an answer I can give you, because the answer lies within yourself.
Yeah.
Like I have been able to kind of push through relying so much on maladaptive daydreaming because of inner work that I have done with myself. Mm-hmm. The cure is honestly to look at yourself and be like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
What's going on in my life? Like, what is the reason that I am so intensely daydreaming? Why is the maladaptive daydreaming? Why am I so dependent on it? And I always say that is the cure. you need to look within yourself and figure and find the cure. Like, I can't give it to you because my cure isn't going to work for you because we have completely different situations.
With your maladaptive daydream, you can do it like around your room, right? Like you can maladapt. So I've never done it like that. I've only ever done it like with, I've never done it walking around. I could do it like anyone can do it. I mean, if you do it, you can do it anywhere, but I would mostly say I do it before I go to sleep. That's like my safe space. Yeah. You know,
that's when I used to do it. Mm-hmm. And I still do it actually like that. Sometimes I just don't want to get out of bed because I want to dissociate. Like, I want to maladaptive daydream. So and I'll spend all day in bed just so I can maladaptive daydream.
Yeah.
So I can do both.
So when you, for people that don't know, like how does it look to like maladaptive daydream? Like as you're like awake and conscious and like walking around.
Well, a lot of people who do maladaptive daydream do repetitive things like rocking or pacing back and forth. I have a whole video of like maladaptive daydreaming caught on camera. Where I basically recorded myself daydreaming. But some people don't. Some people just literally lie in their bed and close their eyes and go to that place.
Is it more like immersive for you to do it like walking or no? Or is it the same?
Yes. It depends on the scenario I'm playing out. If I'm walking next to my para and I'm daydreaming about walking with my para, then yes, the walking helps. If I'm daydreaming where there is a very interactive scenario going on, then yes. Mm-hmm. Or like a scenario where I'm kind of, I don't know how to explain it. It depends on the scenario I'm daydreaming about. Sometimes lying in bed is better for the scenario. Sometimes looking around is better for the scenario. It just depends on what I'm daydreaming about.
Yeah. What would you like say is like a pro to maladaptive daydreaming and like a negative to it?
A pro is,
besides like the feelings you get from it, like besides like the escapism it is, like what other pros would you say?
Gosh, the pro,
I guess it all kind of ends up being escapism at the end of the day, because I'm thinking about it too. I'm like, because there's pros.
It depends on the person, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Because if it is helping you, like for example, if you are dealing with something very traumatic and something that is not going well in your life, and the maladaptive daydreaming is helping you, then that is a pro. Mm-hmm. Like if it's helping you deal with that, then that is a pro. A negative is it can impact your life so severely that you stop being as productive as you can be in this reality. Being a person.
Yeah. I had a psychiatrist. I never got to a point where it was I don't know. That's the thing, is I don't know how much it truly was affecting my life, because it wasn't a conscious thing I even knew I was doing that was like not like tends to be with everyone or whatever. I don't know how much it was affecting my life, but I did get told by my psychiatrist, as long as I am maladaptive daydreaming, he verbatim says, as long as I'm maladaptive daydreaming, I will never fully grow up. That's what he said.
Yep. 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 That is fact. Yeah. And I hate to say it, but that is fact. Okay. For example, this is bad. And I also have DID, so I do have to take that into account, but I am younger than my body's age because of this. Mm-hmm. And it's very complicated because I do have parts of my brain that are the same age as my brain, but because I have wasted so much time in this reality in my head, I am not improving or growing in this reality. Mm-hmm. Like I can daydream all I want about becoming a pharmacist in my brain, but unless I'm pursuing that in this reality, I'm yeah. not a pharmacist.
This is a random question, but do you think, because I thought about this too, do you think like thinking like that in your head about you becoming a pharmacist, you are doing the absolute most practical form of manifesting that there is? Do you think that? Because I think I've been doing that this whole time.
If I wasn't daydreaming about becoming a pharmacist, no, I would not be like doing this.
We're like intensely manifesting our lives, essentially. Yeah. Like I didn't realize that.
That is 100% correct. Yeah. Yeah. So if I like wasn't daydreaming about doing this, I would not be doing this.
So it helps.
Absolutely no way.
It helps in a way. Yeah.
It helps you achieve goals if it's used correctly.
That's, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have like a, like, yeah, like, cause I want my real life in this world to match what is happening in my head.
Oh my, okay. So I, yes, essentially, I mean, you, I guess everyone would want that, but it's funny because like, I like the, what I had in my head from when I was a little girl, like to now, like, I feel like my life unconsciously has mirrored it without me even knowing it. And I wondered, I'm like, am I manifesting this? And I don't even know it. And I think I might be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, no, because I do everything in my power to make my paracosm a reality in this world. So by me doing stuff in my paracosm, I am willing myself to do things in this world.
Yeah.
And so that is definitely a positive. Like I would not be here studying at uni if it wasn't, because I, again, like I can sit down and daydream about studying in my paracosm and I will actually study in my real life.
I know people are going to be interested about like what it's like to go there. So I kind of want to like touch on that a little bit just so people can have like a vague understanding of an experience of maladaptive daydreaming. This is how I've described it to my friends. Tell me if you agree or disagree. But if you were to visualize like your childhood home and like walk through your childhood home in your mind, like, and you know where every cabinet is, you know where every like thing is, you know where everything is, and you can just walk through it in your imagination. And that's how I would describe the intricacy and detail of a paracosm.
But see, that's not going to work for everyone because us maladaptive daydreamers, us maladaptive daydreamers don't realize how unique our brain is.
Okay.
And how most people do not have this ability. So that's, they're still not going to understand it. It's like, the way I describe it is like, go and walk into your kitchen right now. Go and walk into your kitchen right now. That is like, okay, pretend this, like pretend you are sitting here. And pretend that you are not getting up. Okay. Pretend that your physical form is not getting up. Now stand up in real life and go and walk into the kitchen. Okay. But remember, you're pretending that you're still sitting down. Yeah. Go into your kitchen, look around. That is how intense our daydreams are. We could be like, you are physically sitting here, but you are in the kitchen. Right.
Yeah.
So we're pretending that you're sitting here, but your mind is in the kitchen. That is how intense it is.
Yeah.
Like people don't, they just can't wrap their heads around it.
I'm like trying to like find the words to like explain like kind of like an experience, but I guess like to your point, like it's not gonna, like, I don't know, actually. It's like kind of tough to describe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, because I can only really describe other imaginary situations that would also, I'd be, I guess, exclusive to people that maladaptive daydream. Now that I'm thinking about it.
It's literally just like touch the walls, That is how real it is.
How does your mom like respond to kind of like your like super like openness with everything?
I'm not open to her with her at all.
Has she seen your videos or anything?
I don't think so.
No way. Wait, does she know? Does she know anything about?
No.
What? Are you not close with your mom?
She knows. No, not really. Like, well, yeah. I am, but I'm not. She knows about, like, that I have a very, not a large online presence, but I do have somewhat online presence. She knows that. She knows that I make money from online, but that's it.
Does she know, like, what your, like, subject matter is or no?
Not really.
Does she take an interest in it or no?
I don't think so.
Damn. Does she know about the DID?
I think I've explained it to her, but she's the kind of person who is like,
doesn't want to hear it.
Let's ignore. Yeah.
You don't have any problems.
I hope she doesn't watch this. No, because because it's childhood trauma, she will have to accept that something went wrong in my childhood.
What do you mean? Like that she would, yeah.
Like something went
that
wrong.
She had some sort of like, missed something or like did something wrong. Yeah. Yeah. That's like a tough part of going to your parents about like your own issues is because they don't want to accept that they made a mistake. So you get stuck in this kind of like time warp where like you're wrong and they're right. And there's no kind of fighting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. So I can talk to her about it and she'll be like,
sure. Damn.
Sure.
Damn.
Yeah.
Do you have like somebody that you do go to, like your fiance or like?
Yeah. My fiance, Maladaptive Daydreams.
He does.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wait, this how did you guys crazy. Meet?
Maladaptive Daydreaming. Like what? This. She was like, she messaged me and she's like, oh my gosh, I go through the same thing.
So did
Can
she
we talk?
Had she seen your videos before and then she messaged you?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And
you met your fucking fiance from her following your fucking that's amazing. That's literally amazing.
I know. And it's like we're like
that's like crazy. Like what a fucking thing to bond over.
I know. And I'm like we talked and talked and talked and talked, like we talked every single day for like 8 months and then we're like, do you want a date?
When you said like we met maladaptive daydreaming, I literally thought you meant like in your fucking imagination, because you also was it you or
no,
another video no. I watched about like tailing off into each other's your friends' imaginations?
No, the crazy thing is that we both, okay, so we're in a gay relationship. Mm-hmm. We both identify as being gay. I'm so stupid. I didn't realize she was gay. I didn't realize she was attracted to females, even though she wore a pride bracelet.
Okay.
And I thought she was just like a strong ally. I'm like,
I love
wow,
that.
You're just an ally.
Yeah.
And I like we would talk about our daydreams and then I would be like, yeah, so like there is a para that I've created that is exactly like you that I'm dating.
Stop. Not you guys flirting.
And she was like,
using fucking
and she
this.
Was like, and she was like, yo, same.
Stop.
And it went on like that for 8 months.
You guys dated literally in your mind,
in our imaginary world.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's so nice though that you have like not only an outlet but someone who like literally also
has experienced the same thing.
What's like her level of dissociation like in comparison?
It's pretty high because she does have questioning whether she has DID.
Okay.
So her level of dissociation is very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, she might not have DID, but it's like her level of dissociation is extremely high, like mine. So it's like, we can bond over that.
Yeah. What like other, there's like D, there's DID, isn't there's like depersonalization? Is that one of them?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's when you don't, you like detach yourself from yourself, like you like look in a mirror and you're like,
I think I have,
that's not me.
I have
and do
that
you realize Yeah.
I have the one where I look in the mirror and I don't see myself. Derealization
is thinking that this world isn't real, or feeling like this world isn't real.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have like both.
Damn. It's crazy because
that's like DID.
Yeah. Like when you were saying like the first symptoms you noticed was looking in the mirror. That was my first symptoms of dissociation too. I remember looking in the mirror as a kid being like, that's not me. Like just, but not so that I saw someone else, because that's interesting that you saw like a completely thing that wasn't there. I saw a girl, like even now, like I still have it. It hasn't fully, like I haven't fully connected back to myself, which I'm going to like eventually, hopefully. It feels like I'm looking at like a girl that I know, but I don't know her that well. And she's just, I've seen her around. That's kind of the best way I can explain it. So she like, I know who she is, but it's not me. Like, it's just some girl I know. That's kind of the best way I can describe that symptom of dissociation.
Yeah. Is depersonalization. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny.
Derealization is like not feeling like this is reality.
Did you ever experiment with psychedelics?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The reason I asked is because what is like your, like, because I think I expedited some aspect of dissociation through psychedelics, because
that's very common.
Is that common? Okay. Cause that's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, that's very common.
I was already dissociated, and taking psychedelics is a very dissociated feeling, because you are literally in your own world, like high. Like you are just like absolutely dissociated from the rest of the world in this like fictional like reality that doesn't exist, where you get to be in your own world. Like genuinely, that is what hallucinating is, pretty much, like to a degree. I would take like consistently without me real, this was unconscious, like with unconsciously doing this, I was taking so many psychedelics over and over again, like each day, like I wouldn't even have a day off. And I remember and those feelings and those moments being like, this is right. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to kind of retreat and I'm supposed to kind of disconnect because this feels good. Like, this feels really good. And that kind of expedited me becoming very dissociated, because I started to not need the rest of the world, because all I needed was me and psychedelics and nature, and that was it. And so I just started to retreat even more, and I stopped answering people's texts, and then just became this like dissociated girl that like dug myself a fucking hole now that I have to claw my way out of, that I didn't even know I was doing. And I wonder like if other people, their experiences with psychedelics, if they've done the same thing, if you already had predisposed dissociation and you started experimenting with psychedelics.
That is actually really common.
How like do you know like how do you know like so much about like that, for instance? Like, how do you know? Has it just been
because
like
I've spoken to a lot of people, mm-hmm. and I've also read like a lot of papers, and like I've done a lot of research, because I was so curious at like the brain is such a powerful thing, and to me that was just amazing that the brain could do this thing. So I was so intensely like wanting to kind of know as much as I can about this as I can. And I know a lot of people who are maladaptive daydreamers, because a lot of people do reach out to me. Because I'm like the only person consistently talking about it, or who has a very, like, I don't have a very large following, but compared to the like maladaptive daydreaming community, you know, a lot of people aren't talking about it. And so a lot of people reach out to me. So I do know a lot of people, and I've heard their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. So,
and you've heard like the psychedelic kind of story.
I've heard that from quite a few people.
What would people say? Like, I'm curious, like kind of like,
well, they exactly what you said, literally mm-hmm. exactly what you said.
Like they would use it kind of like to escape, and it became a problem.
Exactly.
What like specifically in your eyes, do you think was the cause of maladaptive daydreaming? Like, what, if you're comfortable talking about, like, the trauma, like,
definitely, like, well, definitely trauma, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think the stability of my caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived in 3 different homes at the same time.
What do you mean?
And so I lived with my grandma, I lived with my mom, and I lived with my dad, completely different houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the unstability of that and not knowing whose place I was going to stay at that night. And the fact that they, the environments that I was living at in those 3 different houses were so different. I did not have that stability, so I made that stability in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a major thing that caused it. Like, there are a lot of other traumatic things that happened in my life that I can't share on here because it's like, it would like trigger so many people. Mm-hmm. But there were other like traumatic things that were happening in my life and events that had happened. But I think that is a major component to it, is that I did not have the stability that a child needs.
Mm-hmm. Damn. No, that makes perfect sense, actually.
Yeah. And then I made that stability in my mind. I'm like, I had a place in my mind that I went to.
That was reliable. That
it was like, yeah, that was reliable. And it was like, that's where I live. Yeah, that's where I live. I don't live in these 3 houses with very different environments. I live in my head in this very stable, you know, house where the parental figures are very stable as well mentally. Because I did have like parental figures that weren't mentally stable, which is another thing that,
Would you say, or other, like, are you like a highly sensitive person? Is this like, do you think this is like only goes with people that are highly sensitive?
I think in a way, yes. I think we pick up on things, but we dissociate from them very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So yes and no.
Yeah.
It's like, we're like, oh, I can sense this, but no, bye.
Yeah. I think it's like, I think that's like why, like, and this is again, like me trying to connect the dots. I don't know if this is even true, but in my head, I'm like, I feel like people that do dissociate is because of a sensory overload. It's like too much. You know, so you literally have to just be like, no, like, opposed to people that aren't sensitive can kind of like get away with dealing with trauma healthy in a healthy way. And like, we just can't.
Yeah, no, that's literally it. I think we're just very sensitive. And we're just like, I cannot deal with this. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, I'm really curious, like when I like wanted to, like, I'm really curious about like what other people's worlds look like. Like, that to me is so fascinating. Like, are you like comfortable with like kind of giving like a detailed kind of like rundown of like one of your favorites or like your most first one or whatever, or your scenario?
Yeah, I can. So one of my, like I've talked about before, like me in a world, it's like the majority of the time is spent in a house where my brothers live. And scenarios might be like, I'm chronically ill. So like I have times where I have to go to hospital and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will have a scenario that plays in my head where I have to go to hospital, but they are like, the scenario is happening in that, like in that world instead of this world.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally just take things that are happening in this world and chuck them in that world and create a realistic, like kind of squish it into fit that world realistically.
Yeah.
Like I literally, everything I deal with in this world, I do in that world as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is, and it's just like, it's just done with different people.
What's like a scenario that replays for you?
I just like, cause a lot of it's really heavy stuff. So I'm like trying to think of one that is like not heavy.
I think heavy is fine. Me being like, I'm fine with heavy, like personally, but yeah. Again, like this is you.
I mean,
like,
I can talk about this. But it's so bad. The mental health system in Australia. I mean, I want to say everywhere in the world, but like specifically like in Australia, I know, it is horrendously bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had situations where, like, ambulances have been called and the police have been called because I'm having, like, I'm like a episode. And so at the moment, what's replaying in my head over and over and over again is a scenario that has happened recently where, like, an ambulance was called, the police were called, like, the police came and I was literally having seizures.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, had the ambulance come then. And that scenario is playing over and over and over and over and over again in my paracosm with my, like, powers.
It's, why do you think, like,
yeah,
that's so interesting that, like, situations that people tend to repeat seem to be traumatic. Like, there's almost like an intoxicating thing we get.
No, because the psychology behind it is it's because your brain is trying to process it. Mm-hmm. So when it's happening in the moment, your brain is like, I am not safe enough. I need to put all of my resources into being safe. Mm-hmm. So the part of the brain that processes what you are experiencing stops. And then what will happen is the information that is coming in will go to a different part of your brain instead of the part of the brain that stores processed memories. So the reason that you are playing it over and over and over again, it's similar to a flashback. Like a PTSD flashback,
yeah,
in terms of your brain is trying to process that trauma because it hasn't been processed, because when it happened, your brain didn't process it. That wasn't important at the time.
It's weird because, like, with different, like, the scenario that plays in mine is not something that's happened, but it's traumatic. It's like something I'm making up that's never happened.
That has happened to me before. When before I really, really looked in with into myself and kind of like went in depth and like was like, oh, that's why this is happening. I think you'll find that just because it's not something that exactly lines up with something that has happened in this reality, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You are still processing something traumatic that has happened in this world. It's just you're viewing it in a different way in your mind.
It's like, yeah, I guess it's like the story, yeah, like in which like the message is like there that's like applies there to you. It's, yeah, just in a story kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just like manipulated to fit.
Yeah.
Your a way that you can process it.
That's fucking crazy. Now I'm like in my head, yeah, trying to decipher, yeah, what the fuck all this means.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you could be trying to process something that like how this scenario, this traumatic scenario that's happening, you know, like why is my brain making me do this? But if you like look, mm-hmm, in depth, there is some sort of like message in it.
I have a replaying thing of it being the end of the world, like it being doomsday. That's like my thing, like that's something I find interesting, like that I want to replay this kind of like, it's like a tsunami or something, it's kind of different in each thing.
Oh wow.
But I replay a tsunami over and over again, that there's like a huge tsunami and that people need to be saved and like my house is like super safe. That's like my scenario I play. But that's the thing, is like there's, oh, wow, nothing, there's nothing, I have no relation to a tsunami, never been in a wow, crisis like that, but that's my, that's at least for the last 5 years, that's been the scenario that replays
my head. Yeah. Well, tsunami. There's probably something happening in your like life that isn't exactly a tsunami, but creates the same emotions that you, yeah, are experiencing. Because you could be trying to emotionally process something. You don't have to be physically trying to process the event. It could, mm-hmm, be emotionally trying to process something.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to like look exactly like what happened.
Yeah. That's quite interesting. That's crazy. It's crazy that
I've made a video about this. I was like, because when I was talking to my fiance for the first time, mm-hmm, we talked about this and it clicked in my head. And I was like, what if maladaptive daydreamers? And the reason we daydream is because we are unable to process memories the same as other people. Mm-hmm. So we rely on maladaptive daydreaming to process memories. And I was like, what if our brain just processes things differently?
Yeah.
What if we need that?
No, I was literally thinking in my head, because you could argue that every single thing in your paracosm, in your mouth, like in your world, pretty much every single thing is like there for a purpose. And it is there from some sort of history, some sort of memory, some sort of part of your life. That's why it's constructed. So it could just be like, that's how we're dealing with it. It's in this fictional world where we look at it in a completely different way. And it's kind of hidden. All the meanings are hidden. And you have to figure it out.
Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there was a cure to maladaptive daydreaming, but that cure is within yourself. Yeah. Like, I can't give you that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Do you think you'll do it forever?
I think I will do it at some level forever. Because again, I do believe that my brain is unable to process very heavy things in a normal way. And I rely on maladaptive daydreaming to do that. So if anything, and life happens. I'm never not going to, I can't sit here and be like, I'm never going to experience anything that is like heavy. Like that's unrealistic. And I honestly believe that maladaptive daydream, like I rely on maladaptive daydreaming to process those memories. I don't think my brain is capable of doing it in any other way.
Yeah. Damn.
And I think that's true for a lot of maladaptive daydreamers.
My psychiatrist said, because I was like, at the time, self-conscious about it. And he was just like, honestly, like, I'm happy that it was there. And I was just like, that's also true. You know, like it's also a good thing. And it's also like, without it, like who knows, like where, how we would really feel, you know, like who knows, like we might just be like in pits of depression or like stuck in your real life in a trauma. Like, I don't fucking know. I'm not even going to claim to know, but in a sense, like it is our method of survival. And like, it really did help, you know, above all, which is nice.
This is so heavy.
I know. No, it's fine. I mean, it's just honest, you know, like it's not like heavy or not. And there's so many like crazier things in the world. This is just something like you and I experience, and hopefully some other people like experience and resonate with it. But it's just like a niche problem that I am like putting light to, I'm glad like I can talk to someone about this. Like genuinely, I don't know who the hell else I could talk to about this. So it's really
cool. Yeah.
It's really sick.
Yeah.
We were saying that we're going to do another video kind of answering questions. So because we don't know how much to put in here about maladaptive daydreaming. Yeah.
And there's so many aspects to it. And it's like, there is so much, and there's no way to know what people like are really, really wanting to know.
So this is our open
way to go.
Open floor discussion too. We're going to do a part two and answer people's questions, because we didn't even know where to go with this.
There are so many pathways that we could have gone.
Yeah. Like experience based, like why it happens, like problems, like there's so much to touch on.
Yeah.
That we're doing a part two, essentially. Also, Evie has a YouTube page. If you want to, do you want to plug it? Like and Twitch and all of it.
It's literally Eveline Pahu. Eve.
I'll link it below. It'll be in the description.
It's like I'll send you all of my stuff and then
okay, perfect. And she has more videos on maladaptive daydreaming, which is like essentially like my first intro, so watch all of her videos.
Most of my content is literally just maladaptive daydreaming. That's literally why I made the YouTube channel.
I support it. You like stuck with like the one thing no one's fucking talking. And you know what, I actually went on YouTube recently. There's so many more videos on maladaptive daydreaming just in the last year. Like 4 months ago, there's people posting and like people have actually started to talk about it.
Yeah. Cool. It's really good. Yeah.
It's just I think a lot of people don't know they do it. That's what I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's just going to bring light to that.
And I think the thing is the more we talk about it, the more research that'll be done on it.
Yeah.
So the more that medical professionals can help us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can get answers that we are like talking about in this video. And like, it could be this, it could be this.
Yeah.
Like, we can get answers if we get people to like know about it.
Yeah, it's so like abstract at this point, and it's basically just like us kind of like trying to connect the dots of what we think it might mean, which mm-hmm. is all we can really do. But yeah. Well, Evie, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I'm like it's so refreshing to talk to you. Honest to God, that's like coming from a genuine part of myself. So
thank you for inviting me.
Oh my God, of course. We've been like talking about doing this podcast for so long, and like we finally did it. No, it's like
now that we've done it once, the part two is gonna be so easy.
Yeah, we'll figure that out so easily. So and thank you for joining me. And that concludes this podcast. And please comment below what questions you want us to answer for part two. Thank you. Bye.